Welcome to Accounting High.
If we're going back to abilities, the ability to motivate or inspire, which I think goes with likability, it's really about, are you relatable? Do people see themselves in you?
Relatability.
This is going to be a game for us. People like that because they feel comfort and they feel like they can go to their leaders. And you want to follow a leader that you feel like inspires you. One of the questions I asked, tell me about a leader that inspires you.
May I have your attention, please? I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
Welcome to Accounting High. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here we're on a mission to set our own traditions, an unforgettable experience redone. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Coach Eileen.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session. Welcome to the Varsity Tip Center with your custodian, me, and Coach Eileen Adao. We're going to continue our discussion on creating leaders. We had a 5-part series on the people experience. If you haven't checked that out, please do. We talked about creating leaders in there, creating performance agreements, competency, all the stuff about hiring, everything to coach and create your team and transform them into leaders among your firm. Now we're going to talk practically about how some people actually do that in real life. And Eileen is no stranger to that. Why don't you introduce yourself to our students?
Hi, Scott. Happy to be on here as a coach. Eileen Adao, been around in the industry, accounting industry for a while, started my career off at Ernst & Young as an auditor. So went from staff position to senior to manager and eventually left public accounting to join my very first startup. And was when I joined as an individual contributor, but then slowly realized I was getting bored and wanted to have a team. So I actually built and grew the consulting team at zero. So I went from having a team of 2 to about 15 in a matter of a couple years before I left. And then since then, I went back into firms, leading teams in various aspects, and then back into the technology side, building accounting channels for tech companies, and currently with Glean AI, building their accounting channel and partnerships team.
So you had a lot of resources at your disposal as well, and you had a lot of people that could probably coach and mentor you to become a better leader to then grow other leaders as well. So we're going to take some of that knowledge and apply it here to growing and building and doing that within your own firm. Shout out to Zero. I'm wearing my Zero shirt, which I think you probably had because this was around the time you were an employee at
I
Zero.
I do have that one. And that is known as the very cool shirt because it's all cool. Black.
It's the black on black. I'm wearing it with my Yankee black on black too. So shout out.
You know what would have made that better? If you were wearing your Raiders hat today.
I had my Raiders hat on because we met in Vegas, but I also had this on and I was like, it matches better with this. So. But I actually had that on this morning and then I changed it. So right. Good call. So yeah. And since we met, I mean, we met years ago in Vegas when I probably first started this show, and I guess you knew of me or I knew of you through Zero and stuff. But as we got to know each other, as we got to become friends, we were talking about you coming on the show and talking about creating leaders. So you dutifully did some homework to be on, and you put together a list of all the things that you felt were important when hiring and creating leaders and things that others that you coached and led went on to do. So we're going to go over those things and give me your thought process that went into putting that together too. So,
yeah, I mean, when I was putting it together, I was just thinking back about what I looked for specifically when I started hiring and building my team. And I'll say it right now, I didn't get it right when I first started, right? There was
nobody does.
No. But I want everyone to know that because I think some people think it just magically happens, but it doesn't. It's all a learning experience and you learn from your mistakes, right? I mean, honestly, the very first person I had to hire on my team was probably the very first person I ever had to let go. So, but you gotta hire fast. Well, hire smart and fire fast. But when
the
I was
first person, that must have been hard. We want to talk about that too.
But. Yes, because so when I was putting this list together, I was thinking through one, what were the characteristics really I was looking for? Because I think the pivotal moment for me, I was building my team, is that we actually did a training where they taught us how to hire. And I mean, really taught us and open our eyes. Because I think, especially back then, you hired a lot of people from their skills and what you saw on their resume. And there was a lot of coaching around how to be the person that's being interviewed, but never how to actually interview people. So I found this class to be very beneficial and I took a lot out of it because the very first question that person asks is right on the walls what you look for in an employee or in a team member. And I'd say 90% of those answers were characteristics, not skill sets. But everyone seems to interview for skill sets. So when I was thinking through this, I thought, what were my top things that I looked for in a candidate characteristic-wise? And then from that, I also thought, what did all the people that I hired that became leaders, what did they have in common? And there's almost quite a parallel between what I looked for in hiring and what they were as leaders. It was almost like the next step of what I was looking for when I was hiring. And we can get a little bit more into that.
Yeah, no, and I love that. And notice a lot of these skills or characteristics, they're not technical skills either. The ones that we're going to be talking about, none of this has anything to do with the technical skills. This is somebody, and we definitely talked about this in the People Experience series, you know, somebody that matches your core values too. Somebody that, you know, and a lot of this, these aren't things that are easy to measure too. So we're going to talk about how you identify them and how you bring those out and identify these types of skills. So let's talk about that.
Okay. Yeah. And a lot of it is in, I mean, the hard thing is you have to get as much as you can through the interview process. And that's the most difficult part because you only have a certain number of interviews before you kind of need to
make. Well, do you have to get as much as you can? Can't you do some sleuthing around? Can't you snoop around and see like where they're at on their LinkedIn, on their socials? Do they post stuff? Can you do that? Is that possible?
Yes. And honestly, I know people have done that to me in the past, but to be 100% honest, like, yes, I would look at their LinkedIn and check out what they had on there. Are they active on LinkedIn? Did they have stuff? But outside of LinkedIn, I didn't do much of others around it because...
You didn't go check out their Instagram or anything?
No. And I also think it's a social profile. It could be authentically them or it could not be authentically them. Just like how I find interview questions to be glossy, if I go look up your LinkedIn or your...
That's glossy.
It could be glossy too, which means you're not being authentic.
Yeah, I feel you. All right. So let's talk about these.
The questions that I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So I kind of reiterated a little bit throughout my time, especially if I need to hire fast and build a team fast. But when I was going through the growth phase at zero, I had multiple times. But my first set of questions is always around the characteristics. So it's like already a good way to weed people out in interview one is to figure out are characteristics possibly going to match, and not just with me, but with the team, the culture at the company, because that makes a difference. Someone could be a good fit at one company, may not be a good fit at another company based on culture, right? And then just the fit for the role. But you ask it through questions around that you read in between the lines. Do you want me to actually like go through some of these questions with you?
No. Okay. No, I don't want to hear all the questions, but I do want to hear the theory behind it. Because like you said, one person's skill set may match the culture and their personality may fit the culture at one firm, but it may not fit at yours. So being able to identify what's unique about your firm and asking questions that are going to illuminate or illustrate how that person is going to hold up within that culture and that environment is going to be important. Because it's not portable. Everybody's a snowflake. Every firm is different. Everybody's culture is different too. So they could have shown success in one place and you may be setting them up for failure somewhere else.
That's exactly right. And to be honest, even with my own personal journey, I learned on the other side, you have to be able to interview for that culture too. right? Like it goes both ways. But with a lot of the questions, they seem direct and straightforward, but it's really as the interviewee, you have to be able to dissect those questions and ask kind of similar questions to see if there's consistency in their answers. And that's one way you can find out if like they're showing their true self or you're getting to really know them. So like just to give an example, I know we're not going through the questions, but to give you an example around like role fit. One of the questions I ask is around if you had no economic or practical considerations and could have any job, what would it be and why? Right? One, if they give me an answer that is the job that they're applying for, I'm like, okay, this is a canned answer. So I'm not really, and not that that's a bad thing, but you're not really showing me who you are or what you want. You're not really getting the point of this question.
Yeah. It's very similar to what Dave Barrett, what they ask at Expensify. He asked them, if you had all the money in the world, you know, at your disposal, what would you do? And that really shows somebody's, their authenticity and how honest they can be with an answer to that question, because they get a lot of answers. Oh, I'd give it to charity, or I'd do this for this person or this. And it's not really true to them. And they could read through all the BS. They only get a handful of really true answers to that one.
That is right. The more ridiculous it kind of is, it's kind of like almost the true one. Or if you can hear.
Oh yeah. The more ridiculous, the more true it is, the more realistic and authentic it is. For sure.
And, or if you feel the passion when they're talking about it, because you can sense when people are passionate when they're talking. And so how I take that question is based on their answer, that type of job or whatever it is that they're talking about, is there similarities or parallels to the job that they're applying for, right? Like if they say they want to work in retail because they like to outfit people all day long and make people feel good, that actually correlates with any like kind of CSM job. Right? Because they want to make people feel good. They want to help people. So it doesn't need to be a direct correlation. It's like, but that's why as a good interviewer, you have to be able to kind of connect the dots and not just take the answers at a surface level. Like you got to read into it a little bit more.
I'm going to flip it on you and ask you this question. You're applying for the coach position at Accounting High, right? And now I'm asking you as the custodian, because I do the interviews, if you had no economical, practical considerations and you could have any job, what would it be?
I would mentor college students all day. I would have a non-for-profit that would do that and help single moms. And I can tell you that, one, because I was a single mom and I didn't want to hit a glass ceiling. And I just feel like there's so many moms out there that don't know that. And then so many single moms that feel like they don't have the, like, a way out if they don't have the money to do so, like helping them figure out how to be able to find outfits to interview in a cheap way, how to help them manage interviews, do that. And then the college part is because I come from the Philippines. I was an immigrant here and I took part in an internship program that taught me even things like how to eat properly at a banquet because I used to eat with a spoon and fork, and just learning how to speak in front of people and such. And that internship program, which was INROADS, just helped me tremendously. And I think like I've always wanted to pay it forward, which I did do in my early in my career, was help mentor college students. But if I didn't need to get paid and can live the lifestyle I want to live, I would do that all day long as a non-for-profit. Somehow, I don't know how yet to marry the two, but that's what I want to do.
It might be at Accounting U. It might be, this might be the actual interview that we use for Accounting U when we get there.
Maybe.
that's the college. So dope. Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I would probably go a little bit further and ask some more questions if this was a real interview, but I love that. And you were quick with it too. You had that answer lined up. So it felt like it was canned, but that's because you knew. So even if somebody's quick to answer a question like that, it might be because they're firing on all cylinders. They're present when you're asking them and they're speaking authentically too.
That's a very good point though, because what I tell people too, when you prepare for an interview, just know yourself because you have your experiences, right? Like, yes, I think back in the day, people used to tell you, be prepared to answer these type of questions. But that's why most people end up not being their authentic selves. But just be comfortable in the experiences you have. If you don't, I also learned at a young age not to force an answer. Because when I did a mock interview one time, I tried to force an answer I didn't have an answer to. And I got called out really quick. in a room of 40 people, which was really embarrassing because the interviewer could tell that I just kind of made up an answer. So I think if you really know yourself, you really know your experiences, yeah, sometimes you may need to take a pause to figure out, okay, let me think about that. But as long as you know who you are, I think you should be able to answer any interview question that is thrown at you.
Dope.
Unless it's a very technical calculation type, you know.
Well, even so, I mean, and we've seen GPT force answers for those type of analytical questions too. And you can tell if they forced an answer because it's wrong. It's clearly wrong. They're hallucinating. We're learning that in our tech too. Yeah, let's talk about some of these attributes when hiring, some of the things that you're looking for. So there's five things that you've listed. Let's kind of talk about those, each one.
Yeah, sure. So there's a few things I look for, one being learning agility. And I think, again, it kind of depends on the culture of the company where you're working for. But I do look for learning agility because if you have high learning agility, you can learn any aspect, I think, of a business or what needs to be done. Because you're able to pick a new topic up and figure things out, which then ties into, are you a problem solver or a go-getter, right? It doesn't mean you always have to have the answer. It just means, like, do you have the ability to go try to seek out the answer? And then when you do and go back to whoever it is that you're going to that needs, you know, that you're working with, is to provide solutions. There may still be questions, but it's like, okay, here's the question. This is what I think the solution is. Doesn't always have to be right, but it just shows that you're willing to problem solve. Another one is coachability. That's a huge one, especially if you're coming in and not as a leader yet, is are you able to be coachable and can take feedback? You know, like that's, I think, huge. Or are you set in your ways? Like you have to be coachable to me means like you're still open-minded, right? You're willing to have change. Passion. I think that's a big one.
Whoa. You got good with the illities. Let's keep going with the agilities. Before we move on to passion, passion's a big one, but the ility. So coachability and learning agility, they're very similar in a lot of ways because it shows somebody has a growth mindset. They're looking to grow in themselves, in their career. They're looking to learn more and they're not fixed. A lot of times that person with the fixed mindset has all the answers. And they're going to argue more and they're going to be and argue in a way that's not productive or, you know, it's not contributing to the conversation, but taking away from. So it's more of a diminisher than actual growth minded person. And those are very important qualities in life for us as individuals, but also for people that we hire. So I think those illities are two in the same and they're both great. I mean, those are two of the top things you should look for.
It is. And honestly, when I used to do this, I'd also do a grid of like scoring in a sense of like, how would I rate them 1 to 5 in these things? And then what examples? So when I would do these interviews as well, I'd also make sure there was always someone else in the room, even if they were more of a observer and listener, because it's always great to get another person's perspective. And because you hear things one way, but someone else may hear things another way. So
that's awesome. Do interviews with two people and make sure that you're not doing all the talking too, obviously.
Always I did the two interviews and we would at least two and we would debrief. But before we debrief, we'd both fill out the grid and then we'd talk about examples. And there'd be interesting debates on how someone interpreted something and another person interpreted another thing. Because it's a way to also get to, we all have unconscious biasness, right? Based on our life experiences. And so that's why I think sometimes answers are heard differently. So I think a different perspective is always good.
Unconscious bias is very important to start becoming aware of and making that conscious, but it's hard.
That's a good segue to self-awareness.
Yes, it is. But we still got to talk about passion.
Okay.
Let's go into passion first.
Sure. So like passion is a big one for me because I think it ties into also what your day-to-day like is going to be. And again, I think passion can be sensed in an interview and how people talk about topics. You know, do they light up? Are they smiling? Do they seem happy? Are they intrigued? Are they asking more questions? There's different ways that you can figure out if there's passion. Like, I don't want to say the name of this person, but there's someone in my head that always sticks out when I think about passion, because when I interviewed her on a Zoom call, so this was pre-COVID, but it just soaked through how passionate she was about the accounting industry, in a sense that she loved it, but she didn't want to do it day to day. Like, she felt stuck in her career. And so I was like, oh my God, this, but she had this innate ability to just talk to people. I'm like, she's going to be perfect for this consulting role because she has such a passion for the industry, but she feels stuck. And this was a way to unstuck her. And to be honest, she took this position at a lot less. She had another counter offer that was a lot more. But sometimes money isn't everything, because they want to feel like they enjoy what they're doing. And this is what, that's why I think passion makes a big difference. Because if you're passionate about what you're doing, and the passion will come through in the topics they talk about, and see if that correlates with the business that you're or the position they're going into, then they come to work enjoying what they do. They're happy. It's not a job. They want to make a difference and an impact at the company that they're at, or in the position that they're in.
Yeah. If it was about money, they're not going to last, because then they're going to take that next opportunity that's more money too. And they're going to always be searching for that more. So you got to make sure that it's not just about money for the person you're hiring.
Yes. And it's what also helps with retention. Because when you're passionate about whether it's the company as a whole, what you're doing, your role, you want to stay longer because you still feel like you're making a difference and you're just happy.
And that's what that economic practical considerations question measures. It measures how passionate they can be about something.
That's right.
Yeah, dope. Self-awareness. Ooh, this is a big one. That's a big one for me. I'm trying to become more self-aware of a lot of things. Tell me what that means to you and why you look for it.
I look for it because it's not that everyone needs to be perfect. Everyone makes mistakes, but it's, are you able to self-reflect and know what you're good at, what you're not good at, things that you need to improve on? And I think it's because it's sometimes difficult to work with people that don't have a self-awareness and like what they can be doing, whether that's to themselves, impacting a room. Like, just to give examples, people that aren't self-aware of, I'll even give an example for myself. I know I can talk a lot. I know sometimes I cut people off. It doesn't mean like I am perfect at not doing that anymore, but I know I'm aware of it. So if I'm in a meeting, I try to consciously make sure I take pauses or read the room to see if someone's going like this, or in the Zoom and you see someone flinch or move. Like, those little nuances is like, oh, okay. Am I talking too long? Do I need to call on someone? Like, that's self-awareness, right? It doesn't mean that you have to be perfect, but you need to know certain things to be able to collaborate better with others, as well as like to continue to improve yourself.
I'm the same way. And I look at their eyes too. If I can see their eyes wandering, or I lose them at some point when I'm talking, I got to stop right there and ask them a question or do something. And I've learned this as an interviewer, because I'm a big talker as well, like you. And I tend to interrupt people, or I did in the past. I'm working on that. And that's my self-awareness. That was one of the things that I've been working on. So
it is big, because, and people see it, right? Because I will want to talk, and I'll go like, and someone will be like, do you have something to say? And I'm like, nope. Because I'm realizing at that point, oh, I'm about to cut them off. Like,
and you really don't have something to say. Yeah.
So, you know, that's an example of self-awareness. But also, just like when you're interviewing people, it ties back into the coachability and the ability for you to just be able to grow as a person. Because if you don't have that, you just become oblivious to how you impact others. And just on the opposite side of like talking too much, people that do that, they do go on and on and on, and like no one else gets a chance. I just think self-awareness is a huge one. Also, just like impacting performance, you know, understanding what you're good at, what you're not good at, and being embracing it and being okay with it. To give you another example of just back when I was in college, I started off as a science major and I did not like it. And then I told my parents that I was switching over to a business major, and they told me, well, you're just want to slack off, you don't want to try hard. I'm like, not actually. Like, I actually feel like I have to work harder to get my foot on the door because there's so many people. But one thing they were right about is that business is very general. So I started to analyze myself, and I thought, well, I like math. I'm just done with calculus too. I'm analyzing myself, so I'm analytical. But I say all these things because I think I had enough self-awareness to realize I shouldn't keep majoring in this. because then I would have become unhappy and one of those people that majored in something in college and didn't do anything with my degree. So after I did that analysis on myself, I ended up majoring in accounting, which worked out for me. But I think that's just another example of everyday self-awareness.
Yeah, it's going to be really important for you as the owner, but also for the people you hire. If everybody's self-aware of their strengths and the things they need to work on, everybody's stronger. Because if you can just strengthen your strengths and be aware of your weaknesses and try to diminish them, everybody's going to be better off. Because then what you're doing is you're hiring people to complement your strengths to take care of your weaknesses. If you're weak in some areas and somebody's aware of their strengths and where they're weak, you're hiring somebody to complement you and the others on the team.
So you bring up a really good point that's not on my list because these were like individual things, but that is a big one, is also just how you form the team. Everyone shouldn't be the same. Everyone doesn't have to have the same personalities, because I do think it's really important to build a team with diversity of thought, but you should keep in mind, how will this team blend together? Because when you build a team that blends together well, then they actually can operate and get through things quicker. And I had a guy on my team that would kind of filter through. He was really good at this, and I didn't even know he was really doing it for me sometimes, and figuring out, like, okay, are they going to blend with the team? Or like when someone new in the team starts, he was also very much helping make sure that that person molds into the team well. Like he was, I can't think of the word right now, but he was so amazing at that, to make sure that everyone felt welcome to the team and got blended into the team rather quickly.
Oh, yeah. He was inviting. I don't know the name either, but there is a name there for that. All right. So let's talk about this last one.
Being a problem solver.
Yeah. I think that does go align with the coachability and learning agility. Problem solving is very similar to those too.
Yes. This is the one that I was mentioning. Like, it's just coming up with some solutions even when you have questions, right? Like, probably controversial, but when I was younger in my career, I was told, don't ever come to me with your questions, come to me with your solutions. And it wasn't that you couldn't come with questions. It just meant think through it first before you approach. And that's how you kind of know if you have a problem solver with you, because they don't just come with a question. They don't just come with your list of questions. They say, these are my questions. These were the thoughts I had. What are your thoughts? Or is this right? Or is this? And that's how you know if you have a problem solver. But if you're in a high growth or like, if you're in an accounting firm and there's so many clients to be had and you're running multiple engagements, or which is multiple clients, there isn't always time to sit and find the answer together, right? Like, you got to eventually self-sustain if you want to continue growing. And that's why being a problem solver is important. Did you go out and try to...
Have the initiative to go further.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be always right. You should still have someone if you're not the ultimate leader. And even if you are the leader, leaders don't have to know everything. It's assembling the right people. But that's a whole nother topic. But yeah.
Well, that's this topic. That's what we're talking about right now.
Yes, but we're not in the leadership part yet. So
All right. This
is the initial, right? So it's like you got to be able to take the initiative to want to know the answer. Not always be given the answer. Because if you're always given the answer, that's not showing signs of leadership.
No, you're just enabling people to continue to ask more questions and be dependent.
Yes. And you're just, honestly, you're a doer if you're not a problem solver, which there is a place in companies and for that. But if this topic is finding the leaders, you got to look for the people that are the problem solvers.
Yeah. I mean, these are the people, if you're hiring and looking for these types of skill sets, these are the people that can be future leaders at your firm too. These are people that could be on your management team or that can grow into that. So this is important. These are important questions and important characteristics. I mean, it's important in anybody that you hire to have these skill sets, but really important for the leaders. And we're going to talk about how this applies to growing leaders.
Yep.
So that's our next block here.
Do you want to talk about it all, like how we find these in interviews? I mean, like with the problems, we talked a little bit. For the problem solver in one, this is the case study. Like, you give them a task to do. And whether that is if you're interviewing at a tech company, having them do a presentation and a demo of the product, if you're working at an accounting firm, maybe giving them like a task that they would have with a client or a project in the firm and figuring out, and you give them a little bit of information and then you have them present to you. And it isn't, did they get it right? That's not how you figure out if they're a problem solver. It is what they actually show you and the process that they took to get there. So you let them present to you, but then you also ask them questions like, how did you get here? And it's also even before the presentation, did they come to you and ask you any questions? And what type of questions did they ask you? Like, there's so much you can gather from that process, which will really tell you if someone, I think, is a good problem solver. So
yeah, we talked about this in the people experience where at Dave's firm, they give them a set of tasks in Asana and a dummy client in QuickBooks and to go through and do all of those. And they measure their problem solving ability and learning agility and all of those things within that case study, that problem set. And they're not looking for the right answers. They're looking for how they adapt and how they're working with the tech, but also what kind of questions they're asking and what they're coming forward with too. So it's an entire process that they have built out just for new hires.
Exactly.
Yeah, super cool. Dope. So yeah, leadership.
Yes. So I think in leadership positions, I would watch a lot of the people on my team on there every day. And the most obvious one to see is their likability. Like, how approachable are they with other team members?
More illities.
More illities. Maybe I need to find a way to make all of these illities.
Probably could.
So, yes. And just how they work cross-functionally. That's a big one. And there's a few leaders in my mind that I saw that in, and I actually approached them about being a leader. And they didn't even think about it. It's not even a thought process for them. Like, they just come in.
Most leaders, it's not. Most of the greatest leaders don't consider themselves great leaders.
No. And this, one of the particular people, I remember I was interviewing for a certain position. That was a leadership position. And because I interview with two people in the room all the time. And he was an individual contributor for this person that we'd be hiring. He was always in the room with me. And we got a lot of candidates. None of them were a good fit for us. And one time after we did an interview, I was like, have you ever thought about going for this role? He's like, no. Why would I go for this role? You know, and I kind of let him know, well, one, you're an expert in the space. You've been doing it for a long time. You'd be able to coach people. And two, like, everyone likes you. Like, people will listen to you in this office. Like, you are a go-to person here. And he's like, oh, like, he doesn't even realize it, you know? And like, he's like, I guess I can go for this role. I'm like, you can. And he eventually did get that role.
That's confidence that you can instill in somebody too and believe in them if they didn't believe in themselves or didn't even consider it. That's dope.
Yes.
I love that. I was thinking of a same story that Twyla told when she was hired or she was consulting with FreshBooks to try to find a position for them to lead the accountant community. And then eventually she thought about it and she was like, wait a second, I might be the person for this role. Like, this is what they're looking for. And it's because of all of those attributes, the likability, the leadership skills. And it was either them or her that brought that idea forward. And then it was the end of the search. It was like, okay, yeah, we found our person.
Yeah, this is it. Right here in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's dope.
Let's see. If we're going back to illities, the ability to motivate or inspire, which I think goes with likability. But in that, it's really about, are you relatable? Do people see themselves in you?
Relatability.
This is going to be a game for us.
It might.
Right? Like, I think people like that because they feel comfort and they feel like they can go to their leaders. And you want to follow a leader that you feel like inspires you to do. And that's actually one of the questions I asked. Tell me about a leader that inspires you. And also I asked, tell me about a manager you don't want to see again. And there's other questions I asked later. And that's because, like, the person they describe, and if they're going to be reporting directly into you, are they describing someone that's similar to you? Or are they describing someone that's similar to a person they don't want to work with again? because there's different type of leaders and people need different type of leaders. So it's like, do you match up with the people that you'd be leading? And it's not going to be a 100%. There's going to be certain things, but I think a leader that can motivate and inspire is really important, especially when things are rough, right? Like if economic downturns, are you able to keep your team motivated? Growth phases, those can be hard. Like, or when you're going out to get funding and things seem hard, like, can you keep your team pushing hard? Busy season, can you keep your team fighting the last couple of weeks when they just want to be like done and quit and say, I'm never doing this again? Can you find a way to keep them going?
Sustainability.
My God. You're really good at this.
I know. Well, that's why they call me an okay rapper.
Yes. Yeah. So that is ability to motivate and inspire. So another one I look for.
I got a few more. Agility, flexibility, and not a liability. So let's talk about some of these others.
Okay. I think like, so we talked about the last thing we talked about of being an individual contributor is being a problem solver. And we tied that into learning agility. I think as a leader that forms into like continuous hunger, like to learn, to improve. Like as a leader, you shouldn't stop at being a leader. Like to continue to be good at what you do, I think that hunger needs to stay there, which almost like still ties into that.
It never goes away.
Never.
That definitely ties into a lot of those, but having that hunger to learn and to know that there's always more to learn, that never goes away. Ed Mendelowitz has been doing this for longer than a lot of us have been on this earth, and he's still hungry to learn and still says there's always something new to learn, and it excites him every day.
Yeah.
Just somebody getting excited to learn every day is inspiring.
Yes. The learn and improve. Because even I think as a leader, we're always improving. There's always something we can learn on how to be better leaders for other people. Because there's so many different types of people out there. And again, if we're building a very diverse team, diversity of thought, we have to continue to improve on how we lead these people. And if you don't practice it, I mean, I wasn't a leader for a little bit. And like getting back into it, I had to refresh myself. Like, oh my God, I got to remember that I got to be able to identify how certain personalities are and how they take feedback versus a different type of personality. Because then it ties back into, are you able to motivate them? Because if you coach them in all the same way, you're not going to get the best results out of everybody, which I'm sure was already kind of part of things you've heard in other podcasts that you did. So that's a big one, I think, is still hunger, which ties into a high EQ, right? Like,
what is EQ?
Emotional intelligence.
Okay.
So that ties into the self-awareness. So you as a person has good self-awareness. But I think a high EQ also, how self-aware are you of other people's emotions? Like, are you able to gauge how others are feeling? And what
it's a step beyond empathy.
It is. Because it also is how do you approach them based on your emotional intelligence, right? And what you know. So another example, I had someone on my team that I was very direct when I gave feedback, always. And I didn't have a very close relationship with this individual. Come to learn when I was doing DIS training that I would identify this person as an I and I was a D. And that person doesn't take direct feedback very well. They actually need like recognition or just something positive first before hearing feedback, and like makes all world of a difference. Just a slight adjustment in how you approach someone, you get so much more out of them. So I think that a high EQ is really important for you to be able to successfully lead a team, because everyone needs to be coached in various ways to get the most potential out of them. And that's the thing is, that's how you build an A team, is like we talked about before, strength and weaknesses. Can you identify the strengths of the people on your team and the potential of those on your team and pull the best out of them?
So doing those personality tests is important too at all stages.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no way you know who they really are and how they learn and how they adapt unless you test those things. And a majority of them are great and they're consistent, but you can always revisit them too, to see how somebody's developing and growing.
Yeah. And one of the other things that companies can do is even like a full true like 365, and not just even with direct reports. Like I've done one previously where you do it with, you send it to direct reports, to peers, to clients.
Yeah.
So that you really, and then it compares it to what you said. It's going to test you for your self-awareness, definitely, because do you match up with what they say about you? And just overall, like things you can improve to help your team members and yourself. I think there's a shift that more companies are making those type of things a priority, but I really do think doing them helps you create high-performing teams.
Mm-hmm. Authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
That's our last itty, right?
Yes.
It's not illity, but it's an itty.
It's an itty. Yes, like being who you truly are, this goes back to, it does tie, a lot of these tie in together, because if you're your true authentic self, you are more relatable. And I think being authentic also shows that you can be vulnerable. And I think leaders that can show vulnerability. I don't even know I'm doing it. I think that when you are vulnerable yourself, you got to lead with vulnerability, because that allows your team members to also show vulnerability and be able to, for them to be able to come to work as their authentic self. Not everyone is going to have a good day at work. Not everyone is going to be productive. But if you're authentic and vulnerable and they can be the same, if someone comes in and they're not having a good day and you acknowledge that, they may not be that productive and you'll know it, but guess what? The next day, they probably are going to be, and they're gonna do good work because you were understanding about it, right? But I don't think you get that to that point if you as yourself as a leader are authentic and vulnerable yourself. And that's sometimes hard, especially like I think now with the shift, like back in the day, you really are, I felt like you are two people. You have your work, and you have your personal, and people would tell you, you keep those separate. But why were we ever really told to keep those separate? Because it is a hard thing to do. You are who you are. The emotions you feel at home follow you to work. Unless, I guess there's some people that are really good at, you know.
No, nobody's really good at that. Somebody's maybe good at suppressing it and keeping it held back. But that comes out in other ways for those people, I think. Like, you know, you could be somebody that's very professional, keep yourself together, but then you're that same person at home. You're probably blowing up at your kids or doing something else, you know, in other ways, and it's coming out. I talk about this. I'm very passionate about this topic because I think most of us in this generation grew up to think that, like, and that was what we were told everywhere. You have to be this, you have to be like this in this way. And if you have a corporate job, you probably still have to do that in a lot of ways. You're forced to wear some type of uniform, especially if you have an office, or you have to do this, and not just uniform, but you have to dress a certain way and act a certain way and be a certain way and do things a certain way, talk a certain way. And that's the professional world. And then be a different way when you're at home. That's not sustainable. There's no sustainability there.
It's not. And that I used to teach those courses. But those people taught me those courses, and it's, in even one of my courses, when I was in college, I used to have a tongue ring. And when I interviewed for Ernst & Young, I took it out. Every day at work, I took it out. When I got out of work, I put it back in. And I was used as a use case before I became a professional online.
Where is it?
Oh, I eventually took it out when I got pregnant with my son. But,
okay.
But for my own choice, right? Same with
Well, and your tongue may be swelling up too. There's different things that happen when you're pregnant. Yes. That wouldn't work.
Yeah. And even with my tattoos, I remember when I got my tattoo on my collarbone, I was even like told, like, why did you get that? You're not going to, that might show when you wear like a certain neckline at work. And I'm like, I'll hide it. Like, I purposely get things to hide. But like, I was always constantly told to hide things, how you speak, right?
Hide
like,
who you are.
Yep. Yeah. And so I will say that was a great benefit of going to a startup. And was being told, like, be you, you know, and I am.
Zero was all about that. Yes. Zero was very individualistic and be you. And that was where I learned a lot of my rebellious side of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag human, because we all are. And that doesn't affect our work product. That's the thing. Like, why force someone into a box if they are that way no matter what? So just like you, Scott, I am very passionate about this, too. I feel like very lucky, though. It's ironic that when I went to a startup, though, I still like fashion and I still like to dress up, and people would be like, why do you still dress up? I'm like, wait, nope, this isn't what I like. Like, which they did, at least they didn't like keep asking me questions. But what I liked is because I was my authentic self and still, you know, kind of dressed up at work, when we hired a marketing person, I think they felt first they also had to wear jeans and a t-shirt because they were out of tech, but they saw me every day still wearing what I wanted to wear and dress up. That person told me one day, like, thanks for wearing what you wear to work, because I feel like I can actually wear a skirt to work and not jeans.
Still shows individuality and being different. If you're the one dressing professional when everybody else isn't, you're being an individual. I tend to lean that way too. If everybody's doing something one way, I want to come in a little bit different. I want to show some kind of differentiator. Like Andre from Outkast.
Yeah.
Just be different. Yeah.
And honestly, you don't know who you're inspiring when you are being a little different to give someone else a little bit of comfort.
Ooh, that is a great quote. That's awesome. Maybe we should end at that. Let's do a quick review of what we talked about today with our coach, our new coach here, our coach that's showing her coachability and how she's been learning and developing others through her journey. Hiring. So learning agility, coachability, passion, self-awareness, problem solving, all of those. I think the agility, the coachability, the problem solving can kind of merge together as one unit if there was one word for all of that. And passion and self-awareness. Look for those things in candidates and people that you want to work with. Not even just work for you, but people that you want to work with together, because that's what you're doing. If you're growing leaders, they're on the same platform as you.
Yes. So they have a voice. That's very important. Just because you're a leader doesn't mean you're the ultimate voice. A great team means everyone has a voice.
Well, if you have these qualities, you know that you need voices around you to complement you too. And when growing people after you've hired them, all the abilities like ability, the ability to motivate, inspire, vulnerability, agility, flexibility.
Not a liability.
I know, not a liability. Being a coach, high emotional intelligence. That's so important. We talk about that a lot here on the show. So thank you. You want to close us off with anything? Any other final remarks?
This was great. Just be yourself. Have fun while you're doing it. And if anyone wants to talk more about this, come find me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to chat and help others.
You are. And I appreciate you coming on and teaching our students here. This has been great. Maybe we'll see more of Coach Eileen in the future.
I hope you will.
All right. Class dismissed.